Welcome to the Seven Figure Practice with Gerda Muller, clinical psychologist and leading private practice success business coach and mentor to allied health professionals.
And we are live. Hey everybody, Gerda Muller here, clinical psychologist and private practice success business coach and mentor. And with me is the lovely... Abby Lee, and we are so fortunate that we are being chauffeured to the Brisbane airport by our awesome taxi driver Bikram, right?
Yes.
Yes, great service, silver service. Need to go with Bikram if you can. And we're probably a third of the way there, and of course I was thinking, okay, let's use this time that we're sitting here idle and do a live stream to you guys. So you're gonna be sharing that for us. Thank you, Abby. As you can see, Abby is there on her laptop, busy. I do all the talking and she does all the typing, right? We're an awesome team. And we are on our way to Sydney, as tomorrow I will be presenting the first 2019 Private Practice Success One Day In-Person Workshop at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning at the Regis Hotel. We will be welcoming, how many is it, 24? 23 fabulous private practice owners from Sydney and surrounding area, and we're going to be spending the whole day with them, and I'm going to be sharing them a bit about what I do and my story, and of course, very importantly, we're going to look at the seven secrets of private practice success, and I'm going to basically reveal it all tomorrow. So that's what we're doing on the way to the airport, but I wanted to talk about a topic that has recently come up in my Facebook group for allied health professionals. So if you are not in that Facebook group and you are a allied health professional, whether that is a psychologist, a occupational therapist, a speech pathologist, dietitian, any type of allied health professional, you are more than welcome to send me a join request. Just search for Private Practice Success for Allied Health Professionals and be sure to answer the three questions, because if you don't, I just go decline, right? You need to bother to answer the questions. And yes, and you need to be a private practice owner. You know, there's so many groups on Facebook. Let's face it, some people are like a member of hundreds of groups, and it can be such a waste of time. And for me, it's really important that this group is very targeted to supporting, educating private practice owners that are every day in the trenches of running their own private practice. Okay, look, I'm hand-free. I'm getting some thigh exercises. I'm holding the tripod between my legs. We've got one person here with us live. Say hi, say hello, so that I know who you are and who is joining us. So, as I was saying, I had this post and question come up in the Private Practice Success for Allied Health Professionals Facebook group regarding waitlists. And this is a topic that comes up every now and then because it is an ongoing issue for a lot of people. So the first thing I want to say about waitlists and waitlist management is be grateful you have it. You know, a waitlist is such a double-sided sword. Is that the saying?
Yes, double sword.
Yes. Because on the one hand, it means that, you know, you're doing something right. Either you just randomly opened up your private practice in an area where there's nobody else and everybody's coming to you, or maybe you've put in the damn work and you've done the marketing, you've gotten out there, you've networked and you've told people how you can help, and you are getting the fruits of your labor. You probably have been doing great in-session clinical work and your clients have been getting great outcomes, and as a result, you've built up a reputation and therefore people want to come and see you. Hey Allison, how are you going? So, you know, you want to look at your waitlist with gratitude and going, I'm very grateful that I do have a waitlist. But I also know that if you are like me, and that's the other side of this double-sided sword, that the wait list is very often the thing that keeps us awake at night, okay? Because what does a wait list mean? It means that there's people whose name is on this list, and these people aren't getting the help that they need, okay? They're not getting to see the psychologist or the OT or the speech pathologist, which means that everything is just status quo. There's no intervention happening. And we all know how important early intervention is, right? I'm sometimes surprised that clients are actually willing to go on a wait list. Because if I was unwell, or if my child was unwell, if you've got a child practice, I would want to get help as soon as possible, right? Why would you put your mental health and your happiness on hold? I would be going out searching for somebody until I find somebody that can see us. Obviously, that person needs to have the competencies and experience, right? Which sometimes, depending on where you live, you might not be able to find, hence a waitlist starting to occur. So there's so many variables that come into play. Now, before I'm going to give you some strategies for waitlist management, I know that this is a big thing for solo practitioners, but you know it's also a big thing for group practice owners. And as a group practice owner that has been doing this for more than 10 years, it's really tough that because we have this additional aspect to manage. Not only do we have, you know, what I've just spoken about that double-sided sword, we're grateful, but you know, we worry about this client. We also now have a team of clinicians who also come into play. Hey Jessica, how's things in Melbourne? So, and we often need to not only manage our own systems and processes and our own emotions, thoughts, feelings, perspectives around the practice waitlist management system, we also need to manage that on behalf of our team, and we need to manage our team's coping, I'm going to use that word, coping with the waitlist. And what I have often found, and if you agree with me, let me know. If you disagree, let me know too. But that's what I have found, and this is what a lot of practice owners tell me from right around Australia, that a lot of times the difficulty with their team is, and let's just say it because I say things unfiltered, is very often the clinical team, you just can't satisfy them when it comes to their caseload numbers, right? So they either worry that they don't have enough clients, or they worry that they have too many clients. Now, worry leads to anxiety, it leads to stress, and that's a really, that can be a debilitating emotion to have. It's not an emotion that you want present in your clinical team who are there to take care of the clients. So that's a really important thing to address with your team during supervision. And they need to address that with you potentially, or with their supervisor, whether that is in-house or external, for them to work through that black or white thinking, you know, in terms of getting to that middle point, you know, because it's like there's always an underlying neuroticism. It's either I worry that there's open appointments in my diary and oh my goodness, I'm not gonna earn the money I need to support my family and pay my bills, or oh my goodness, I'm overwhelmed because each and every appointment is filled, when I'm gonna do all the work, the paperwork, admin stuff related to it. That type of thing, right? So it's really important through reflective practice to address that with your team, because you really want your team on board when it comes to the waitlist management policy, okay, and system that you implement in your practice. And I would say also that as a practice owner, you have responsibility to do that with them, right? It's very important for you as a practice owner to know that you need to look after your team, and in turn they will look after the clients, but you need to sit down with them and address it. Don't just wish for it to go away, don't just brush it off. You need to help them process and work through it, okay? Because they will get to that place where they can understand it. All right, so coming back to, all right, I've got this huge wait list. What do I do now, right? And I need to have some water as we're stopping here at the traffic lights. All right, let's say you are a solo practice owner and you have been in private practice, whether it's 6 months and you're fully booked, 2 years, 6 years, doesn't matter. You are fully booked. What do you do? What do you do when that wait list has five names on and then all of a sudden it's 10, then it's 15 and it's 20, and before you know it, people are gonna have to wait 3 months before they get an appointment, and you start to lie awake at night worrying about all of this, right? Well, this is an important, what's the word, junction, where there's like a T-junction, you know, like a fork in the road scenario that happens for you. Now, first and foremost, you're going to have gratitude. As I said, you go, thank you for this amazing opportunity for growth within my practice. And then this is a great opportunity for you really to sit back and reflect on, what do I want from my practice? Where do I want this to go? All right. I know a lot of people start private practice. I'm one of them. I started it. I had just had my second child, who is now 12 years old. He was 12 in December. I just had him, and I was thinking, okay, now's the time to very leisurely, very casually, on my own terms, with very little hours, start this private practice hustle on the side, right? So a lot of us just do it as a couple of hours to, you know, maybe retain our skills, to stay connected, to do our own thing, set our own hours, and then all of a sudden it like grows and it becomes this big thing, right? It's like, oh my goodness, how did that happen? I did not even plan that. That was not part of the picture when I started this, right? Just wanted to do my own little thing. So for a lot of people that happens. So when you get to this fork in the road, you need to sit back and really think, all right, it's happened. I'm grateful for it. What do I want to do now? Well, what I want to do is going to depend on what I want. And you really want to tap into your vision for yourself as a clinician, as a professional, your vision for what you want to do and how this all fits with your family, and you know, what your family situation is, and your vision for your life, your purpose, the meaning that you have. And you want to go, okay, what does that look like? And then based on that, you want to decide, all right, what am I going to do? And generally people will do one of two things, okay? They will either go, you know what, I'm happy just doing my own thing, my own hours. Maybe your kids are still young and you go, you know, I don't want to grow too big. I want to have that time to spend with them. Then what I would suggest you do is you do some research and you find out who in your neighborhood, in your geographical area, is similar in approach to you and has similar competencies, and I would establish a strategic relationship with that person, right? The whole idea is to get to know them, to get to know how they work and operate, and to then, when you are fully booked, to refer your clients on to somebody that you know and trust will look after them, all right? And they can do then the same for you. So, you know, maybe when they are very full and maybe it's a bit quieter for you, because maybe you've taken, you know, 6 weeks holidays over December and January and you need to refill their books, and they've been working and they've been taking on a lot of referrals, they can then refer people on to you. So that's what I would do if that's your vision for your practice at this point in time. Establish a strategic relationship with another fellow solo practitioner and support one another in this way. Or alternatively, this is one hell of an opportunity to actually expand your practice. And that is the second option. Okay, this could be the time for you to expand by either employing someone as part of your team or by subcontracting some of the work out to someone else. All right, or potentially doing a room rental arrangement, getting somebody in, giving them the overflow of clients and charging them an amount to use your room, okay? Obviously for me at my practice, I do subcontracting. You can do employees, room rental. You know, there's a lot of do's and don'ts around room rental that a lot of people get wrong, but that's a topic for another day. But this is your opportunity to expand. So if that's the vision, if that's the purpose, if you're going, you know what, I'm not gonna wait, I wanna have a greater impact right now, like within the next 6 months, then let's expand. rent another room. You know, if you're renting service offices, if you know, to keep, open up your eyes to what's around you, what opportunities, where can you get a room where you can have a second person? Or maybe if you're only during school hours, get that person in to do the afternoons and Saturday, right? Or if you're only working 3 days a week at your office, see if you can get the other person in, a subcontractor or employee, to do 2 days for you. This is such an amazing opportunity for you to grow. And that is actually how my private practice grew. After I started, after maternity leave, and then I went, oh my goodness, what I'm going to do now? Well, I want to help more people, right? So I started my Logan Home Group private practice 3 years in. I went, okay, now the whole practice has a wait list. What do we do now? Oh, we'll start another practice. That's when we started the Kapalabha practice. And for me, it's always about having greater impact, but that's because that's my values aligned vision, right? In terms of having impact, having more of a ripple effect, knowing and owning that me as one individual can only do so much. Hey, Amisha, thanks for joining. Can only do so much, and I want to help as many people as possible, right? And that's why I started that, and that's when I started yourcycleonline.com, so we can take this helping business online and give even more people access and help even more people. So it really comes down to what is your vision and what is your goal. If you're a group private practice, okay, and you have this issue, I would do a very similar thing. You know, look in your area. Is there a solo practitioner that can deal with more clients and help and support a fellow practitioner? All right, it's okay to do that. You won't lose your referrals or your referrers, okay? You need to trust in the reputation that you have built up, because if you're a group private practice and you've got so many clients that you have a wait list, you know, other things that you can do is, are you also making optimal use of your rooms in terms of your operating hours? Are you working on Saturdays? You know, how can you use the same space that you have but in a better, more effective way? So there's a lot of things that you can think about there. However, if you are one of those practices, and those names of those practice owners are coming up into my head right now, in Tassie, you know who you are. In Townsville, you know who you are. In those rural and remote areas, I've got nothing. Okay. The fact of the matter is, you guys have got wait lists because you are rural, you are remote, and there's just no practitioners, there's just no clinicians. And I think for you guys, it's really about saying, you know what, we're doing everything we can in our power to help people. But we can do only so much given the human resources that are here. And it's so important that we as private practitioners also have a voice in calling the government and NGOs and charities and holding them to account to do their work and fulfill the gap in the market where they can look after more people. Because let's face it, guys, they are not using the funds that they have as well as a private practitioner could, right? If you just look at some of the stats in terms of how much it costs them to develop, to run one service versus what we do it for, there's just no comparison. So I think we need to be a voice and advocate for government to have better checks and balances and really speak with their departments, because they just pay for so much admin, all of that stuff. They will have team members seeing 3 clients a day, whereas in private practice we see 6 clients a day, right? They need to make better use of the human resources that they have so they can help more people. But unfortunately, the government system doesn't always think like that, right? But we in private practice do, because for us it comes down to helping more people in better, more effective ways, whilst of course not burning out our people, and we don't do that. Amen to that, says Alison. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yes, government can learn a thing or two from us private practitioners, right? Most definitely. I always think, why would you want to work for public mental health? It would kill me to go and work for them. Even if they pay me $250,000 a year, I'm sure nobody gets paid that much unless you like running the mental health unit or something. Even if they pay me that, it would kill me to work there. Because sitting in meetings and doing forms and stuff, and that's not why I became a psychologist. I became a psychologist to help people. And yes, you know, policies, process, procedures is an important part of that. But no, if I were told I could only see 3 clients a day, it was like, geez, I'm going to be so bored. That's not why I studied 6 years. That's not why I gave up and sacrificed so much to become a psychologist. And for me, you know, money is important because, of course, they pay lots of money. And in private practice, really hard for us to compete with their salaries and wages because, of course, they've got funding. But, you know, I'm motivated by more than just money. I'm motivated intrinsically to make a difference. It's why I've built up my little empire that I have, because I want to help more people, right? It came from a good place rather than just going, I'm going to go and work for a place where I can get paid the most money. To hell with that. That's like cheating on yourself to some extent and not being true to your values. So again, you know, those are my values. Yours might not be similar, whomever you are that listening to this. A public system in Tassie is so wasteful. Oh, I hate that, Alison. I so hate it. And I can assure you, it's not only in Tasmania, it's here in Queensland as well. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people in there trying to do good work, but very often it's not psychologists that's running the show, right? I'm not sure who's the best person to run the show, but yeah, they also don't have the business skills. It is just so top heavy in terms of how they do it. If they were to give that funding to us in private practice, we would be able to help double the amount of clients with the same amount of money. That I'm so confident of. Anyway, we are just going over, this is the Gateway Bridge?
Yes.
Going over the Gateway Bridge, which means we are probably 10-15 minutes from the airport. Traveling Virgin today. I'm cheating on Qantas. Yes, I'm feeling a tad bad about that. I've always been very much a Qantas girl, just because as an immigrant coming into the country, it's like Qantas is so iconic Australian. You know, when you see all the advertising and marketing overseas, you know, Qantas is like, that's part of being Australian. And that's why I've always flown Qantas. But Virgin's got purple branding. Okay, so Virgin has been winning me over. Don't laugh
at
me. Yes. Why else?
I love it.
Hey Fern, how are you? Virgin is more on brand for us. Yes. Not that we're wearing purple today. We like both in black, but I've got purple in my hair, right? So I'm gonna go with the airplane today. That goes with my hair, goes with my branding. That's how you make decisions. No. Anyway, we should probably get going and get ready to be dropped off. Whatever you're doing on this Thursday, have a fabulous time. And remember, if you have not come to a one-day in-person private practice success event, well, you are missing out. Big time, right? And people often say, well, good, I've been in private practice, you know, 6 years, 16 years. Will I actually learn something? You betcha. You betcha. Just because you've been doing this private practice thing for many, many years doesn't mean you've been doing it the private practice success way. And if you were anything like me, even if of those 7 secrets, 2 secrets, no, 1 secret could change everything for me and my business, why won't you come? Why won't you attend? Okay? You really need to get there. People that's been there will attest to the fact that this is a life-changing event, because I mess with your head, so to speak, right? Don't I? I just mess with your head. And what I mean with that is your mindset, in terms of really making that shift of running a successful, profitable private practice. And that's a set mindset that you need to have. And you just start to look at things differently. And of course, there's lots of tactics and strategies and how-to stuff that I share with you. And Abby will confirm that we've got lots of extras.
Yes.
Yes, yes, that we haven't had previous years. We've never had those things. 3 gifts, right?
3, yes.
Yes, the little one and the 2 big ones.
Sorry, 4. I added something.
Oh, she added something. Oh, awesome. I love that. So 4 gifts. that they are getting. And previously we didn't give away any of this. So we're really stepping things up this year, making it super special. So if you've missed Sydney, you've got two more opportunities in Brisbane. We are in Brisbane in April. We are in Melbourne in May. So we'll put up the link to where you need to go to register. Can't wait to see you there. And I can't wait to spend tomorrow with the amazing practice owners from Sydney. Until then, have a fabulous day. Say goodbye, Abby.
Hi, have a good one.
And it's goodbye from Bikram, that's been listening to all my talking so patiently. And remember, as always, all you need to do is say yes to your very own level 5 private practice. And I'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.